Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. We often hear terms in the vernacular to describe a man when he is easily frustrated or angered. Seemingly insignificant things can easily explode into arguments that may affect, if not seriously damage, couples' relationships when some men develop what has been called the irritable male syndrome. Identifying and understanding these troubled waters is the topic of this edition of Radio Curious. Our guest is Jed Diamond, Ph.D., author of the book Mr. Mean, Saving Your Relationship from the Irritable Male Syndrome. In this visit, we explore the causes of the irritable male syndrome, how they affect relationships, and how a better understanding of the causal factors and influences can help diffuse anger and frustration that draw the joy from couples' partnerships. I spoke with Jed Diamond on May 28, 2010, in the studios of Radio Curious in Ukiah, California, and began by asking him to define the irritable male syndrome. Jed Diamond, welcome to Radio Curious. It's been a long time.
It has been. It's good to be back.
So your book, Mr. Mean, Saving Your Relationship from the Irritable Male Syndrome. I'd like to begin our visit with a description of what the irritable male syndrome is.
Well, this really evolved from research that I had done on male menopause, which was one of my earlier books. And what we found was that one of the key symptoms that was repeated over and over again for men that were going through midlife changes was a great deal of irritability, anger, frustration, and I wanted to understand this better. So I did an in-depth research project looking at this dynamic of irritability and found that it was a key issue for men at midlife.
So the issues, I suspect, would be biological and sociological.
Indeed. We found that there are actually four key interrelated issues that were part of the dynamic. One was changes in hormone levels. Secondly, fluctuations of brain chemistry. Thirdly, increasing stress levels in the men. And fourth, a real change in the sense of identity and sense of role satisfaction that men were having.
So where do we go with this? I suspect from your book and the subtitle, Saving Your Relationship, the idea is to understand for men and women. How do you bring this understanding to the average couple? And that would be parallel, I would presume, in an average gay couple who have a long history together.
My concern was, I'm a psychotherapist, as you know, and have been treating people and couples for 45 years now. So my main issue is, how do you help families? How do you help a couple deal with their relationship in a way that's satisfying for both, so that the relationship that often is of long standing doesn't fall apart just when the couple could enjoy it the most? So what I wanted to do was develop very specific interventions, very specific tools that I've used in therapy to help people, and put them at the service of couples that they can use themselves to help their relationships not only survive, but to thrive.
So examples would be?
Well, we do things, for instance, in the therapy sessions that I do, of really tuning into what your own needs are. Often when we're in a long-standing couple, our needs get kind of merged with our partner. And one of the things that often happens is we get disconnected from what our deep needs are or how to express them to our partner. So I give exercises that help them reflect on their needs, to tune into their needs, and then to be able to share them with their partner in a way that really works for them, that helps each other to connect.
Let's be specific, if we can, about what some exercises might be.
Well, for instance, what I'll ask people to do is close their eyes. That's a way to disconnect from the outer world, to tune into the inner world. To begin to breathe, to take slow, deep breaths that enable you to get really relaxed. Then to begin to let your focus go inside and to ask yourself, what is it that I really need right now? What are my desires? What's going on with me? What's the deep hunger that I have that often isn't being satisfied? Having gotten in touch with that, then I have people visualize that to get it as clear as they can in their mind, in their psyche, and then to write them down after they've reflected on it, to write it in words, write it in pictures, write it in whatever way they're able to contextualize this. And then once they do that, to share it with their partner, to give them the insights into what they're seeing when they look inside.
Is this done in the therapy model or outside of the therapy model and brought back to the session with you?
Well, when I'm doing it in a therapy context, I will do both. Sometimes I do this right in the office where people can sit and I can guide them. I also give them homework that they can do themselves. And so when they're doing this as part of the self-reflection that I guide them to in the book, it's something they can do on their own. They can, in a sense, guide each other and guide themselves as they're working this in their own home.
I believe what you're saying, however, carries an assumption that both partners to the relationship want to be there. And I would suspect that in many contexts of the people who come to see you, one wants to be there more than the other, and perhaps the other doesn't want to be there.
Well, what I've found is there's only one reason that I've found in the years I've been doing therapy of why people would not want to be together. And it's usually because pain has developed, fears have developed, concerns about, are my needs really being heard? Am I being attended to? Do you care about me? And so when these hurts, pains, disconnections occur, eventually you start wondering, do I really want to be here? Am I really going through pain needlessly? So when you help people get back in touch with their needs, when they're able to express their pain without blaming and judging their partner, often they're able to get back to that sense of, we're in this together. We want to help each other. We want to be able to satisfy each other's needs. And the reason that we may want out more than the other partner is because we're in more pain or we're in touch with that pain. Once we get that articulated, then I can help a couple realize they're both on the same side. They really want the same thing. They just often have gotten disconnected from the knowing that their partner wants to be cared for, wants to be loved just as much as they do.
In your book, Mr. Mean, you make references to men reacting to not having gotten enough attention from their mother as boys.
Right.
And you bring this out 45 to 50 years later into their lifetime in middle age. Tell us about that.
Well, I think as a psychotherapist that specialized in men's health issues through these many years, I found one of the secret needs that men have that they don't talk about is how much they need to be cared for, nurtured, held, in the same way that they did when they were children or they wished they had been cared for and nurtured and held as children. And these needs never go away. We kind of have the notion that as we grow up, we become adult, we don't have those same needs that we did when we're children. But I find that that desire is just as strong and men repress it. We're told we need to be strong, we need to be macho, we need to be, you know, men's men. We shouldn't be needy. That's feminine. That's not what men really need. And that hunger that men so deeply have but don't express often comes out at midlife, often comes out when we hit our 40s and our 50s, And if not dealt with, it becomes the seed or the core for that anger, that irritability, that grouchy old man syndrome that we see so often.
So you're implying that the need is equal for both men and women. And you're saying that men repress it, women don't.
Well, I'm saying something even more striking, which is the research shows that in some ways men need that nurturing even more than females. That we know from research on brain chemistry that the male brain is actually more sensitive to emotional overload, to emotional trauma from the interactions that happen. So in some ways, the male psyche, the male, soul needs nurturing, needs care even more than the female. But clearly, men and women need this in measures that often are not met. And both men and women are hungry for the connection that sometimes they didn't have when they were children, but then strongly are hungering for their whole lives.
Well, I want to know how you conducted the research that led to that conclusion. But before we get there, I want to say that in this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Jed Diamond, a psychotherapist who lives in Willits, California, and has been working with men and women for 45 years. And we're talking about his book called Mr. Mean, Saving Your Relationship from the Irritable Male Syndrome. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Jed, tell us about the instrument that you prepared that resulted in the conclusion or gave you evidence to conclude that men are more sensitive to emotional overload. That seems like it's a contrary statement to what many men our age would say.
Well, it is. And actually, the research isn't my personal research. This was done by a number of neuroscientists that actually measured the brain functioning, what was going on in men's brain when they were either recalling traumatic situations or they were actually put in stressful situations in the laboratory. What I was able to do was to build on this, and I developed an instrument that I called the Irritable Male Syndrome Questionnaire that started out as the scale I used when I was doing the research for the book. But after I did it, I posted it online so that other men and women could take the quiz, could assess the levels of irritability and anger that they were feeling. And in the last 5 years, we now have had 60,000 men take the quiz, and probably 20,000 women have taken the questionnaire. So we have a huge database now that have enabled us to see really the extent of irritability and anger that goes on in men and how it's reflected in their relationships, and more importantly, what we can do with whatever level of irritability and anger and frustration that men have to heal these wounds and help relationships so they can grow and stay together and thrive through all the rest of the years that people are together.
I want to know specific parts of the questionnaire, but before you tell us, give us the website so our viewers and listeners might be able to have access to
it. Sure. Yeah, it's real simple. It's imsquiz.com, the letters IMS for Irritable Male Syndrome, quiz.com. And what we found is this is a wonderful tool, particularly for men. We found that wives will talk to their men or their partners will talk to them, and the guy will say, no, not me. I'm not doing that. I'm not angry. And they take the quiz and they get a score. And all of a sudden I get letters from the guys saying, my wife's been telling me I've been angry all these years, but I took the quiz, I got the score, I scored really high. And now I really recognize that this is a problem, and now I'm ready to get some help.
There's confidentiality in taking the quiz that can be either maintained or revealed by the quiz taker.
Exactly.
Some of the questions are?
The four key symptoms, there's 50, but they often group into either hypersensitivity, where that feeling of walking on eggshells, almost anything you do can set the person off.
Let's stay with hypersensitivity for a minute. Anything that the partner does could set the man off.
Right. So it's his hypersensitivity.
Particularly to her.
Well, it often gets reflected with her. Often the, you know, I was just talking to a man this morning as a client, and he was saying that things were frustrating at work. He was having a really difficult time at work, and he was, you know, just reacting, and every little thing bothered him. And he'd keep it in check, you know, all through the workday. But when he came home, he found that when his wife said one little thing, he blew up on her. So although he may be hypersensitive to many different situations, including work, including other parts of his life, often it's at home where it erupts, and often in obviously the most intimate situations that are the most precious are where the hurt and the pain can be the most damaging.
Similar to when a toddler breaks down when they come home after they've played happily in daycare all day.
Exactly. Yeah, so the hypersensitivity is one. Frustrations and all kinds of symptoms that are related to frustration. Anger that can be blowing up kind of anger, or that cold, you know, my wife used to call it when I was going through this, is beady-eyed look. And finally, the fourth symptom, you know, has to do with anxieties and fears and worries. And altogether, we found that there were this 50-symptom questionnaire that then helped us group to different types of irritability, from the grumpy type of that just, you know, frustration, but just little things bother me, to the explosive type where things actually blow up and there's, you know, rage that can turn into violence, to the depressed kind of irritability where you're, you know, you're frustrated, you're depressed, but it's an angry depression, not a crying, you know, weeping depression.
So we have this knowledge. We have a couple where one or both have answered the 50 questions, and there are about 50 symptoms.
Right.
You analyze that, and then that's where you go back to what we talked about a few minutes ago of close your eyes and determine what I really want.
That's the first
step. Each one of us.
That's the first step.
And where do we go from there?
Well, once we see what we want and what we need, then we see what's blocking needs fulfillment, what's getting in the way. And some of the things we test for in our clinic, we look at hormone levels, because one of the things that often gets in the way for men is their hormone levels are out of balance, and we want to know what those are.
With a blood draw.
You can do blood draws. You can also do saliva test, which looks for the hormones, what we call the free testosterone level. So we can do blood, you know, and or saliva. We're looking at stress levels. So we want to know, you know, how much stress do you have in your life? We want to look at diet, because we find what you're eating actually has a very important influence on your feelings, and particularly irritability and anger. We want to look at exercise and how much you're moving, how much you're, you know, actually physically, you know, letting off steam. So there's a number of things that we then look at to see what's getting in the way of the man being able to be the kind of man he wants to be and being able to relate to his partner in a way that's satisfying. And then we intervene. Then we offer different solutions, from increasing hormone levels to, you know, changing diets, to getting an exercise program, to psychotherapy. We have a whole host of tools that we can offer once we know what's really getting in the way of a man getting his needs met and a couple being able to come together.
In the United States in general, in California more specifically, and Northern California even more specifically, there's an increase in the use of marijuana. In the northern part of Mendocino County, where you live, much of it is grown. Do you find that the use or non-use of marijuana influences the issues that we're talking about?
Well, I think they do. Not just marijuana. I think there's a whole host of substances that people can use if used well and without problem, whether it's a cocktail before dinner or a glass of wine with the meal. I mean, we use those things to change our emotions, to change the way we feel, to relax, to unwind after a day. But for all of those things, you can overdo that. You can use marijuana as an escape. You can use it as a way to block out from the realities of life. You can use it as a way not to talk to your wife or not to talk to your partner. So all of these things can be used well or they can be used with problem. And clearly, as the stress levels in the world increase, as environmental stresses go on, economic stresses continue to increase throughout the world, what I'm seeing is the level of escape that people are experiencing is going up. The level of irritability and anger is going up. And often, rather than dealing with these things directly, we misplace our intention. We escape from dealing with them, and that then leads to more problems. And I want to stop that. I want not only relationships with partners to get better, but we want people's relationship with their neighborhoods to improve, their communities to improve, with their economic world to improve, their situation with the political system to improve. I think we need to be more engaged on many levels than we are now.
So on the front end, I would anticipate that denial rides high.
Indeed.
How do you get past that veneer of denial?
There are two basic ways that people get through denial. One is you can wait until the major crisis happens. You have the heart attack. Your wife says she's going to leave you. You ride your car off the road because you haven't had enough sleep. So in other words, one way to get through denial is to do nothing until the world impinges on you in a way that you can no longer ignore it. The other way, which I think is less stressful, is to anticipate some of the problems that can occur. That's why the questionnaire has become so helpful to so many people, because in a sense it forces you to take a look not only in the moment, in the now, how are you feeling now, but it enables people to look and say, how is this going in the future? If I don't make some changes, what's going to happen in the next 6 months, the next year? And it enables then the man often and his partner to say, let's not wait until we hit the wall. Let's not wait until the heart attack occurs. Let's not wait until, our sex life goes out the window. Let's do something now.
The website for the questionnaire is www.imsquiz.com.
That's right.
And Jed Diamond, I want to thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, I have a few questions.
Surely.
When was the last time you experienced irritable male syndrome?
Well, as you know, part of the reason I wrote the book was for the clients that I was seeing, the people that I wanted to help, but also, quite frankly, because my wife was telling me, you're getting kind of irritable. It's a problem for us. I mentioned that kind of beady-eyed look that I wasn't even aware of. And I think so many men are not aware of the frustration and anger that builds up and how we take it out on our partner without a rage or just that stare that can be so hurtful. And my wife pointed it out to me, and I began to, at first resist, like many men, to deny, like many men, but finally to go, I think she's telling me something that's truthful.
Because she cares for you.
Because she cares for me. And so I dealt with that. And so it's been probably, 6 or 7 years in the past that I really tackled this head on myself. And I can tell you our relationship, we've been together over 30 years now, really turned around when I started dealing with this in a more effective way than either trying to suppress it and close it down or to blow up on her or other people, friends, colleagues. It makes a big difference when you take that anger and you're able to express it in constructive ways.
And can you tell us your age?
I'm 66.
And more questions. What would you like to do with the rest of your one precious life?
Oh, that's a good question. I can tell you this one precious life is becoming more and more precious as I get older. And I hope that with this rest of my life, I can do a couple of things. I can continue to have a really deeply loving relationship with my wife. I hope I can continue to help and support my children and my grandchildren that are the next generations coming up. And that I can continue to share what I know in my writing and my counseling and my talking to people so that we can all live in a world that works better, that's more balanced, that's more sustainable, and more loving, really, for everybody.
And a eureka moment or an aha moment that has come to you in your experience that has stayed with you?
One aha moment I got with my wife was I was feeling so frustrated with her one day, and it seemed so clear to me that she was doing things that were causing me pain. She was irritating me, and it was so clear to me that she was the cause of my problem. And I was so frustrated, I went out for a run. I'm a runner. I like to run. And I went for a run, and I came back, and I felt like I'd been transformed. It was something had lifted for me, and it was an aha moment that said, nothing's changed between she and I. She hadn't changed anything. She didn't say anything different. What had changed was my perception, having broken this frustrating interaction, doing something good for myself like running. I realized a lot of my problems were in my own head. And if I could release those in some way, in this case by running, I could be a lot happier without being so angry and so sure that I had to get my wife to change in order for me to be happy.
And finally, Jed Diamond, is there a book that you could recommend?
One that I've been reading lately is by a psychologist and a philosopher named Irvin Laszlo, Transformation 2012.
Well, Jed Diamond, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you.
Jed Diamond is an internationally respected leader in the men's health movement and author of the book, Mr. Mean, Saving Your Relationship from the Irritable Male Syndrome, and the book, Male Menopause. This interview with Jed Diamond was recorded on May 28th in the Radio Curious Studios in Ukiah, California. The book Jed Diamond recommends is Chaos Point 2012 and Beyond, Appointment with Destiny by Irvin Laszlo. There are over 380 Radio Curious archive editions on our website at radiocurious.org, where all programs are free to download, copy, share, or rebroadcast as you wish. We'd like you to use the whole program and ask that you give credit to Radio Curious. You may also subscribe to our podcast and receive new programs as they are produced. Click the podcast link at radiocurious.org. If you need a CD in MP3 or WAV format, that can easily be arranged. Radio Curious is produced in our studios in Ukiah, California, where we enjoy hearing from you. The email is curious@radiocurious.org. Snail mail may be sent to Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541. Hannah Bird is the assistant producer. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm your host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.